Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember, life is about the journey. Okay, we're back for another wonderful interview on Journey to Midwifery podcast. I'm excited to finally get going again. And I get to have on my first guest this season is Sylvia. So Sylvia, if you can just give us an intro, who you are, all your fancy letters, and if you're comfortable sharing like at least where maybe the state you practice in.
So my name is Sylvia. I am a certified nurse midwife in Amarillo, Texas. I got my master's at Texas Tech. So I guess all my fancy letters are CNM, APRN, and I was NCCRNC. So I worked in the NICU before becoming a midwife.
Good. That's nice.
Yeah. So that was an advantage that I had because I do feel very comfortable with the babies. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I live in Texas, or Amarillo, Texas. There's not very many midwives here. I was the first. I think there was some like maybe 15 years before I started practicing again here in the area. But when I first started practicing, there was none. And now there are three. So that's some good news.
So when did you graduate and start practicing?
So I graduated in 2015. When I first graduated, I did take a position in Lubbock. There was a brand new birth center there. So I started there, but then she closed the birth center. It was just family and health reasons that she ended up closing the birth center. Luckily at that time, there was a CPM that had moved to the area who had been practicing in the Philippines, and she was looking for somebody to work really closely with. That wasn't something that I was thinking I would want to do, is open up my own practice. I had actually applied in El Paso for their Texas Tech position over there. And when this CPM friend of mine showed up, I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. And here I am 8 years later, still practicing in Amarillo.
So you have a out of hospital setting?
Yes.
Okay.
So I do at a hospital and I own a birth center.
Okay. And you said that was not what you thought your career would be.
No, actually, of course, like I came from NICU world, so I had that medical mentality, and I thought, okay, I'd be a CNM, and I'd work at the hospital, and I'd have that little, security blanket with me, just in case something ends up happening. And fortunately, when I did most of my clinicals, it was out of hospital. So then I got to see that side of midwifery, and I loved it. I loved not having to have to call a nurse to be able to, do a vaginal exam, or they had to bring me equipment because there was nothing in the hospital. I did do some clinicals in the hospital, but I was just like, this isn't what I want. So I decided to stay out of hospital.
And, in my experience working in hospitals, we don't get to handle babies very often. So having that NICU background in and out of hospital setting, I think is probably one of the most critical places that you could use that skill. And I haven't met too many that are out of hospital with a NICU background. So props to you. But I do have some like deeper questions I want to ask you about that and just kind of how it applies to your practice and things like that. But can you tell me, start from the beginning, what drew you to midwifery in the first place?
So I always wanted to, I guess, deliver babies. When I was growing up, I wanted to be an OBGYN and I wanted to be the first one to touch the babies. I was always drawn that direction. And then senioritis kicked in and I didn't even want to graduate high school, much less go to medical school. So I did join the military. I was in the Navy. I was a hospital corpsman, a pharmacy tech. And for the last almost 3 years of being enlisted, I worked in the third floor, which like every single hospital probably around the country, the third floor is labor and delivery and ICU and pediatrics. So I prepared all of the medications for that floor. And whenever I said, okay, I want to be a nurse, then I was like, it's going to either be labor and delivery or the NICU, because in nursing school, I did my OB rotation and it was amazing. Like I didn't remember I had that passion. And I had already had 3 kids at that time. And it was the first time I had ever met this little couple. And I was almost in tears when the baby was born. And the family was like, is this your first birth? And I was like, yes, I didn't even cry when my own kids were born. So from that moment, it was, okay, eventually I'm going to be a certified nurse midwife. And that's how I got.
So did you go to nursing school while in the military or did you get out?
No, I had waited until I got out. I just, you know, I thought it was too hard to work full time and go to school part time. And, you know, I was just young and dumb. And I did all that after I got out of the military when I had 3 kids and then had to work full time. And then I was a single mom for a while and had to go to school full time. And I did it the hard way. I did it the hard way.
So I guess that leads to my question about like finances. Did you use your GI Bill to pay for school?
I did. So I did my Montgomery GI Bill for, you know, I exhausted that. And then I did my Hazelwood Act. And whenever I went back for my master's, I think I finished most of it. I think I have a few more hours on the Hazelwood Act. So that was one of, well, when I was looking for midwifery schools, that was one of my, okay, let's see if I can find one in Texas that is a state school so I can use my Hazelwood Act. So I was
very... I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
Oh, okay. So if you enlist in the state of Texas, you get the Hazelwood Act. And if you go to a state school, then the tuition is waived.
Oh, well, I'm not from Texas, so I guess I wouldn't know that. But that's good information for people coming from Texas.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So you had the two combined and that covered almost everything.
Yes. And then I was also a single mom. So yeah. I got all of the financial, and that's more my undergrad, you know, because by the time I was in graduate school, I had gotten remarried and then I was working as a nurse. So then, you know, I wouldn't qualify. Or I don't even know if graduate school does full FAFSA. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so
either. I think it's just loans.
Yes, I think so. But
so you were in a really good financial situation. Sounds like, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
When you graduate, not with loans and debts and things like that.
Well, I mean, I'm still in debt.
Okay.
So loans. At the time that I was going to midwifery school, my husband had his own job construction. Well, he's a painter. So he had his own painting company and we needed some money to kind of just survive off because he was just getting it off the ground. So I ended up using most of the loans just so we can live off of, even though I didn't use it for school itself. But
yeah. I think you're not alone in that one. So that leads to my next question is how did you manage school and motherhood and sounds like newish relationship, lots of dynamics when you were in school?
I have very amazing kids. They were great. There was a lot of things that I missed because there was no certified nurse midwives here in the area. I had to travel. I had to go to Dallas and El Paso and Houston. So there was a lot of traveling that I did. Luckily, the program was online and it was a hybrid online and we would just go to the campus once a semester for a few days. Luckily, the campus is just a couple of hours away from me. So it wasn't, you know, too long of a trip being away from my family during those times. But I was kind of gone there for a while and come back and, you know, work some while I was gone while I was in town, just PRN. And then I would go back out of town and study and all of that stuff. So it was challenging, but it wasn't impossible. I know there was a time when I was taking a test. I was in Houston and I was in the hotel room and the internet was crappy and it kept, you know, kicking me out of the test. And I was in tears. I'm like, I had to finish the whole test in like 20 minutes. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm away from my family. Is this even worth it? And I called my instructor and I just kind of like vomited, you know, just everything that was on my mind. And she was just like, okay, Sylvia, hold on. She's like, let me just see what you got on your chest. I was like, I failed it. Everybody had bombed the first test because we were all like, we were all studying, you know, the foundations of gynecology and, you know, all of that stuff. And then our first test was like, what year was the first midwifery school established? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, is this going to make me a better midwife, you know? So anyways, we all bombed our first test. And I'm like, if I bomb this test, then I'm going to be out of the class. I'm going to fail. And she's like, hold on. So she checks and she comes back and she's like, Sylvia, you got an 80, can't remember, 87, 89. And I was like, oh my gosh, like 20 minutes. So I think right then was when I was like, I think this is what I'm meant to do, because there had been some obstacles and somehow, you know, God opened that door for me. And here I am.
Yeah, I can understand those moments. All the feels on that. So your kids were old enough that they could kind of be independent when you were doing your
school. Yes. So my older three kids are from my first husband, and now they're out of the house right now. So at the time that I was in school, I think it was like a sophomore, freshman, and eighth grader, I think it was, or seventh mm-hmm. grader. And then I had a little one that was in kindergarten. So he's still at home, but like I said, I just have really good kids.
The bigs were probably very helpful for that little one.
Yes. They were just very understanding. They were very understanding. And another thing too, they weren't into a lot of extracurricular activities, you know, so whatever it was for school, you know, like a spelling bee, they were in band, you know, but with band, it really isn't a lot of like, hey, game day this day, game day that day, you know, so I was still able to go and do things with them because they didn't do a lot of things. And then of course, like birthdays and that kind of stuff. Well, even if I wasn't here for their actual birthday, we still went and celebrated a different time. So that wasn't that big of a deal. Whenever I can take them with me, I would take them with me. I do have a sister-in-law that lives in Houston. So if it was the summer, I'm like, come on guys, let's go and we can stay with your aunt, you know? So that was nice too. Whenever I had the opportunity, I would take them.
Mm-hmm. Is that program still standing? And mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good.
When I graduated, I think I was their third class that graduated. Mm-hmm. It was only four of us in the cohort, and it's grown. Mm-hmm. And now I want to say last year they graduated over 20 certified.
Wow. Certified. And you said it's a hybrid. So you go once a semester.
Yes.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the skills, the OSCEs. I can't remember what it stands for, but you just go and you test for your skills and then you kind of learn. They prepare you for your next semester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like a good program. I hadn't heard of that one, but probably most people in Texas have. So you graduated, and then kind of tell the story about, again, how you fell into this position.
So after graduation, I ended up taking a position at a birth center in Lubbock. Mm-hmm. It was called Midwife Cottage is what it was called. And it was a new birth center because the person, the owner was also a graduate from Texas Tech. And sadly in this area, they just don't have certified nurse midwives in the hospital. Although we have Texas Tech physicians, like a medical school in Amarillo and Lubbock, they just did not want to hire CNMs. Lubbock now does have CNMs in the hospital. They have two of them. But here in Amarillo, there's still a pushback and they just don't want to bring us on yet, but they will. So she did not want to move, and she ended up opening up a birth center. So when I graduated, the director knew the midwife very well. So she introduced me to her since I was in Amarillo. I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I was going to have to pack up and move somewhere. I was actually looking to go back into the military. And so I can kind of just go that route. But my kids just really did not want to leave the area. I'm originally from Southern California, and my parents moved me to the Texas Panhandle when I was 15, and I rebelled and joined the military to get out of here. And like I said, my kids have been very good. I didn't want to give them a reason to rebel because they say you pay 10 times what you do to your parents. With your kids, I was like, yeah, maybe if we can do something to make it work where we stay here in the area, then let's do it. So I ended up taking that position. Which was kind of hard, just because both of us were new midwives. Both of us wanted to learn. So, you know, it was kind of hard, like who gets what birth and, you know, all of that stuff. So whenever she closed the birth center, told me that she was going to close the birth center, I was looking, you know, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll just go to El Paso. I had, when I did my clinicals in El Paso, I became good friends with some of the midwives there, and they were like, come on, Sylvia, just apply for this position. It's, you know, it's going to be amazing to have you here. And I ended up applying, like I said, and it was, like I said, it's God opening doors, because whenever I was looking into the position over there, the midwife friend here had called me. And then the same day that she said she got a collaborating physician was the same day that they called me from El Paso and said, hey, Sylvia, this job is yours if you want it. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? And my husband was like, let's just stay here and see what happens. And I did. And my practice has grown, has doubled every year. So I started the home, first it was just a home birth practice. And I started that in 2016. And then, like I said, every year it doubled. So I started with 8 clients my first year, and then 16 the second year, and like 24 the third year. And then COVID hit. And with COVID hitting, all of, you know, the moms not wanting to go to the hospital, and it really wasn't even them not wanting to go to the hospital because of the virus. It was them not wanting to go to the hospital because of the restrictions. You know, they couldn't have anybody there with them. They had, you know, their husbands who are amazing, but cannot help at all to support them in labor. And they were wanting unmedicated births, and how were they not going to have their husband there, you know, to have somebody else that can truly support them. So those were the moms that were looking out, you know, for different options. And from there, it just kind of blew up, and I'm still crazy busy. I mean, I'm as busy as I can be for being a solo practice. So I do about 6 moms a month, and occasionally we have extras because I'm not going to say no to my repeats. I tell my husband that my goal is to be that generational midwife, you know, the one that caught, you know, grandma and the great grandchild, but maybe not great grandchild, but but I want to be able to catch the ones who I'm catching now. I want to catch their grandbabies.
Now solo practices, I've heard just so many things, but it's busy because you're always on call, right? Essentially. I've had some that say I can only do 2, like that's my max, but you're doing 6. And you still are momming. You still have one at home, right? So how do you do that? How do you balance that?
So I am on call all the time, but I'm not on call all the time. So like right now I have moms that are 38 weeks, and then so I know that they're in the window, but chances of them calling me tonight, probably not likely. So I'll go out to dinner, you know, I'll go and I'll have a drink. You know, I'm not opposed to not having a drink. I'm not going to get drunk, but if I have one glass of wine, you know, one cocktail, it's not going to be the end of the world. Now, if I have somebody that called me and said, hey, Sylvia, just heads up, I'm starting to have some regular contractions. Then if I go out to dinner with friends or family, I'm more likely not going to have a drink, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm not going to just stay home waiting, you know, waiting by my phone, seeing if somebody's going to call me. I think it kind of just depends on the personality of every midwife. You know, if going out of your house is going to give you more stress than just staying in your house waiting for somebody to call you, well, then by all means stay home, you know. But for me, I can still do anything that I want to do. Just know that I can't leave town is the big thing. And then if, you know, we have a birthday dinner and I have somebody that's contracting, then we take separate cars and my kids know, like, hey, I might have to just get up and leave in the middle of dinner or in the middle of a movie. And they're okay with that. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Has that changed for you? Like, do you feel like that's how you felt from the beginning? Or do you feel like maybe you were more anxious at first and you've chilled out?
No, I think that's how it's always been. And I guess the nice things is like, I have my cell phone, you know, I don't know. A lot of times I sit back and wonder, how did midwives do it 30 years ago when they didn't have cell phones? You know, well, I guess 30 years ago they had pagers and it was a little bit easier, but 50 years ago when there was no pagers, when there was no cell phones, mm-hmm. like, did they just stay, you know, at home? But that's one of the nice things is that there's a way that they can get a hold of me and it doesn't matter where I'm at. They're going to be able to reach me and I'm going to be able to leave and get there.
Mm-hmm. How do you integrate your clinic time?
So I do clinic on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So like that, I have all of those other days available for birth, or if we're needing to reschedule, then we have other days throughout the week.
Do you feel like your families are pretty understanding when you have to reschedule?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is just because, you know, they know that if it was them that was in labor, then I'd be canceling also.
Right.
So yeah. I am trying to, or I guess for like the last 6 months, I've trained somebody. She's actually one of my birth assists to do fetal heart tones and fundal heights. And, you know, because a lot of times that's what moms want, mm-hmm. you know, they just want to be able to hear baby and they don't want to reschedule because they want to hear the baby. So for the ones that aren't in depth visits, so like, I'm not going to do an initial prenatal, like I'm not going to let her do the initial prenatal,
right.
I'm not going to do postpartum ones, you know, but if it's just, hey, let's just do some fetal heart tones, I won't reschedule those. And I'll just let my birth assistant do it.
Yeah. Do you stick with just OB or do you do any women's health outside of like the postpartum? Mm-hmm. You do.
Yeah. I do some women's health. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually wanting to focus a little bit more on PCOS, just because I diagnosed my daughter with PCOS and I had already been wanting to kind of dig deeper into that. And now that my daughter has it, now that's a little bit more of a push. So like that, I can offer support because there's really nothing out there. There's mm-hmm. nothing out there to really help women understand, you know, besides throwing a Band-Aid here, take this birth control pill, you know, it's like, there's other things on the background that we can do to reestablish even fertility. I mean, not that that's everybody's goal, but I know that's a lot of, when it comes down to PCOS or infertility, it can be PCOS. So, you know, my daughter had told me, she's like, Mom, so with PCOS, does that mean I can't get pregnant? And I said, well, it's going to make it harder. I'm like, so don't go do stuff that you shouldn't be doing because you can still get pregnant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% PCOS. I always feel like, and everybody's situation is so unique, like the symptoms they have or, you know, all the things. So I agree. There's not enough information. You know what I think is funny about midwives, or it's interesting, is that we all seem to get interest based on it's so personal. Like a lot of times you're drawn to midwifery because you had these great birth experience, or you didn't, or you had terrible birth experiences, whatever, or things like your situation. Now you want to do PCOS because it's personal to you for your daughter. Or I see a lot of midwives, once they start to get older, like, I want to study more about menopause. We don't know enough about that. And now I'm experiencing it and I'm realizing, you know, there's nothing out there. So I really love that about midwives is that we do that. So I liked to hear, that's really interesting to hear about you doing that as well. So my NICU questions are, you know, I talked to so many people that had labor and delivery and some that have nothing, but I've only met probably, you're probably the second person I've really interviewed with a NICU background. How do you feel like that played into your practice, especially in the beginning when you took that medical mentality with you?
Well, I think the big thing is being comfortable. I if I'm having to resuscitate a baby, I feel comfortable resuscitating a baby. But I think when I say comfortable would be like, hey, this is the baby that we can probably watch a little bit longer versus I really don't like what's going on with this baby. Like we need to get baby seen right away. Kind of a thing. I mean, the assessment, I can do that with my eyes closed, you know, and even right now I did a little bit of travel nursing right after I got out of midwifery school, just because we had all these, you know, bills we need to pay. And it was just kind of be quick money. And I didn't want to do labor and delivery. I wanted to do NICU because that was just, to me, and even now, I think it's more like second nature than, you know, doing labor and delivery in a strange hospital that I don't know who the doctors are and every doctor likes it a different way. Whereas when you do NICU, doesn't matter which hospital you go, you're going to take care of the baby the same way. So kind of like the same being outside of the hospital. Like it doesn't matter if I'm in a hospital or out of the hospital, I'm going to care for that baby the same way I would care for that baby wherever I'm at. So I feel really comfortable with that. And I don't know. I mean, when I was in school, when I was seeing some of my cohort students, struggling with newborn stuff, I was like, how, what's so hard about it? Like, this is so easy. And I never thought that that would help me. I never said, oh, I'm going to be in NICU so one day I can be a better midwife. You know, I just was like, I'm either going into labor and delivery, or I'm going into NICU. And at the time, you know, going into labor and delivery was an act of Congress. Somebody had to retire or die to get an open position. And NICU was available. And I'm like, okay. You know, I'm eventually going to be a midwife. This is just my stepping stone. And like I said, I didn't even think about, and honestly, I probably didn't even think about it because I didn't think midwives can take care of babies. You know, it wasn't until I was in school that I realized, oh, I can do well newborn care for the first 28 days of their life. I'm like, okay, all right.
Right, but you're in the right setting to do that because I can take care of newborns for the first 28 days. So, like I said, that's perfect for what you do. Do you feel like you were, so sometimes what I'll see too is people who like labor and delivery nurses will come out of the hospital and then they'll do home birth. And there's more fear because of what they've seen brought to the hospital from home births or, you know, various reasons, kind of more focused on the what could go wrong. So from the NICU perspective, do you feel like that was with you when you first transitioned to out of hospital?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And surprisingly, I don't have, I'm like that very middle ground. I'm not too medical and I'm not too, hey, kumbaya kind of thing. You know, yes, our bodies were made to do this. You know, yes, birth is normal and it's a normal process in a woman's life. Yes, there's a lot of things that can go on during pregnancy that can make you high risk. But for me, I'm more of the middle ground where it's like, hey, we're going to try as any of the natural things that we can do to make you stay down your normal path. And if for some reason we deviate from that normal path and we can't get you back with natural stuff, then let's go to the, you know, pharmaceutical stuff and more medical and that kind of stuff. So I think because I've seen both, I can stay down the middle ground with that.
Yeah. You do fit this very well. You just don't seem like an anxious person. So
yes. Even inside, I might be like, oh my gosh, like when there's an emergency, anything like that, I might be like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. But I do feel like I kind of can bring it all, like reground everything, I think, yeah, in a situation.
Yeah. So I guess I would ask like, finances. It's probably hard to say because you have kind of a home birth income, but I'm not sure to ask whether like, what is the cost of home birth for a client or what is the general income for a home birth midwife? Because I'm sure it varies. So you answer that however best. Like if someone graduated in Texas and they said, I want to be a home birth midwife, what can they expect?
I think it's going to be really, it's going to be different depending on where you're at. Mm. Like if you are in the Dallas area, San Antonio, Houston area, where there are a lot more midwives. So here in Amarillo, there are a total of 5 midwives. So no, 4 midwives. There are 3 CNMs and 2 of them do not deliver. And then there's a CPM. So right now there's just 2 of us that deliver outside of the hospital or in the hospital. I mean, well, no, in the hospital. But there's just 2 of us that deliver. So with that, like there's, I guess here we can charge more and charge whatever we want, just because there's not that many versus if you do go to the Dallas area and there's hundreds of them there, then there's going to be a little bit more competition. But in this area, most of the midwives are charging about $6,000 mm-hmm. for it. And it kind of just depends. I do have an office, so I do have the overhead of the office and then I have the birth center. But even with that, I just need to deliver 2 moms, catch 2 babies in order to pay my overhead. And that would be my staff and rent and all of that stuff. And then the other is just going to be profit to grow the business or for, you know, take home. Mm-hmm.
And to like buy supplies and things like that, I assume. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. And does Texas have, is some of that covered by insurance as far as the client?
So since I'm a CNM, yes. Mm-hmm. So I can submit claims to the insurances, but that doesn't mean we get paid. Most of the time they say, oh, that's not allowed. I'm like, what do you mean a newborn exam isn't allowed? Like, that's, why wouldn't it be allowed?
Right.
You know, so they don't pay it or like, oh, everything goes towards the deductible. What I do in my practice is I'm not in network with anybody. And I do submit a claim if people have insurances, but every payment is required up front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because I'll have some insurances that, you know, we have claims that we've submitted that are over a year old and they're still denying or whatever. And I'm like, I can't practice not getting paid, waiting to see if the insurance pays anything.
Right.
And a lot of times after the baby is born, they don't care if they pay or not, you know, even though you build a wonderful relationship and you have a bond, like they don't care. Their baby is there with them now. And, you know, if I get paid, that's not their problem anymore.
Right. Yeah. I understand. If you do get insurance money, does it just like get reimbursed back to the person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we end up doing, because insurance is a headache, we charge $100 to submit like in-network exceptions and all that kind of stuff. And then if the insurance pays anything, then we do take 10% off. And then the rest of it goes back to the family.
Okay. That does sound like a bit of an administrative mess, but that's why I don't do that part. I don't do billing. Yeah. Hopefully you have somebody that does that for you.
Oh, yes. I do. I have somebody that does it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That seems like a mess. Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, it sounds like you have such a, my hats are off to people who do at a hospital, because really I think that it's a lifestyle. You can't just go home always. And like when I'm off, I'm off. I mean, I think about the people that I've been with that day or who have labored, or sometimes I'll check, you know, with my midwife colleagues, how did she do? But technically I'm off. I don't have to worry about it, but you take that. All of you guys who work at a hospital take that with you all the time. It's very personal. You know, that's a lot. I think it takes a very special person to do that job, to live that life. Do you think so?
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's even times that I'm on vacation and, you know, everybody, they always have questions, you know, and honestly, I tell my clients, it's like, you know, I'd rather you call me so I can talk you off the ledge instead of you just Googling or asking, you know, mom or grandma or aunt, and then they give you, you know, advice that, you know, sometimes may be good and sometimes may not be good. Right. So I'm okay with it, you know, as if there are times when I take vacation that I do not have any phone service, you know, but for the most part, I don't mind it. But yeah, I really when you have an out-of-hospital birth practice or a solo practice like this, you really get to know your clients. You know what they're really wanting, what their wishes are for the birth. You know what's going on at home, because that incorporates in their care, the stress, all of that stuff. And then you build that bond, do that relationship, that trust. So it could be hard for some people that can't just turn off the phone, and, not take work home. But I think I've been very blessed to where, at least for me, it doesn't ruin my day if I get a call and, I'm at dinner. And sometimes it could just be something quick. Sometimes it can be like, hey, let me call you back. We'll figure this out if it isn't an emergency. But that's one of the nice things too, is that I do have some clients that do respect when, it's not office hours. But I also don't want them to think that they can't call me when it's not office hours. Cause that's one of the nice things about midwifery too, is, I'm available to them. And I do have a practice set up, because I just do have 6 months, moms a month. I don't have 30, 40, different births that I'm going to be doing a year that I have to take care of them from first prenatal till 6 weeks postpartum, so my load is a lot less. And I can, and like I said, I have very, my family is very good with, not, sometimes my youngest, he's like, you're going to take that call. I'm like, I'm just going to step aside and take a call. I'm okay. I'm not leaving. I'm not doing anything like that. So, but they're very understanding, and thankfully, because I do have an understanding family, taking my work home isn't that big of a deal for me.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just share just on the other side of the spectrum. I did work in a hospital setting my first 6 months, there was so many things about it I loved. I loved the individualized care. I loved how involved the families were. I mean, it's holistic care to the nine. I loved the midwives I worked with. I loved it. I could not do the life. It was too much for me. Even sharing call, essentially you're still on call. Cause like if that midwife got, tired or had too many births or whatever, I couldn't do it. I was very torn walking away, but I was like, I know this isn't the life for me, but it is for, like you. But I needed, I'm scheduled at this time and I'm off at this time. That is what my brain and my body needed. Even though I loved it, even though I loved the women and their families, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to share that for people who I think, sometimes it's romanticized at a hospital. A lot of people, oh my gosh, I want to do this. I want to do that. And sometimes that romance works for people like you. For people like me, it didn't. Right. But I love what I do. I work actually in a very low risk, hospital setting. So it's been a perfect dream job for me. And I think and I know midwives, one of my very best friends, she loves her high risk, high volume, 10 babies a shift. That is her thing. She loves it. So we all have a place. I mean, every person deserves a midwife, from your type of setting to my friend's type of setting. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to bring that up. Cause I don't know. I just love how easy you are about it. You're like, yeah, this is it. It's my life. And I wasn't.
Well, but that's just the thing. It's like for me, and I don't know if that's more of a recent thing. I mean, you're in the military too. So I don't think it's being in the military where you kind of just go with the flow, go with the punches. You don't know what's coming. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of the military is just kind of like you take the orders and, you just got to do the best with what you got, mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of the problems could be if so-and-so could do it, why can't I? Well, because you're not so-and-so, and there's lots of different factors that go into it. Like I keep saying, I have a very understanding family, So maybe some midwives out there don't have understanding families where you have children that need more of your attention. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids didn't need all of that, you know, time from mom. Like, yes, they knew I was available to them when needed, but I didn't have to go do lots of things with them, you know? So that's what a lot of people have to remember. Like, it's not just you, the midwife. It's you, the midwife, and your family and your clients and just the even the location that you're at, you know? So like sometimes, and not that I'm saying that everybody has to take the burden, you know, but there are times where I'm like, there's nothing else available for this person. Like, I'm it, you know? So I know there's been times where we're trying to plan something and then I have all these people calling and they're like, hey, we want your services. We want your services. And I'm like, well, I wasn't going to take anybody during that time. And now it leaves them with nothing. So mm-hmm. I'm like, how can I do that? And like I said, the nice thing is like, we don't always just have to leave. So I can be like, okay, well, you know, we probably won't take this vacation this time, or we'll cut it back, or we'll do this, you know, but I'm not saying everybody has to do that. You know, mm-hmm. that's just going to be to each individual person. And I think that's what's really hard. Just, I don't know if it's in our culture where we always want to keep up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. you know, and that's with everything, you know, in life, with work, career. And, you know, if somebody's doing it, why can't I do it? And, you know, social media is nice, but social media can also be bad because you only post what's all great on social media. And, you know, you're not posting, you know, the bad things where like, hey, I was up for 48 hours, you know, waiting on a birth and now I'm exhausted. You know, it's just, oh, look at this wonderful birth we had. Well, yeah, but you know, it does, you know, you know, it unfolds differently each time. And with every midwife, it's going to unfold different. And there's some that need that on-call life. There's some that need the set schedules, you know. But even when I worked in the hospital, I would pick up extra shifts and I would pick up extra shifts all over the place. It wasn't just nights, it was days, you know, but it was also kind of like, hey, I'm planning this vacation. I don't have enough money for it. Let me work 5 days in a row, you know? So even since then it was where, you know, my work was all over the place and my kids understood it because they're like, oh, we're going to California in a month, you know, so mom's working extra hours so we can go to California. And that's just how it's worked in my life. But that doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody's life. Mm-hmm.
As mm-hmm. in my case, mm-hmm. and my kids were young at the time and I was also pregnant. So it felt overwhelming to be available mm-hmm. for everyone else when I had so many that needed me. I didn't have kids that would necessarily understand at that time. Now they probably would, but you know, that I couldn't always be available. So, I mean, maybe too, sometimes it's timing, but mine was likely a mixture of personality too. Mm-hmm. So I was going to say like, what kind of advice that you could offer, but I think that's the best right there. I do. That was perfect. So, and I think it was good to hear the contrast of you and me and our stories. I think, you know, we both love what we do and came into it for probably a lot of similar reasons, but you have to practice there and I have to practice here, and that's okay. Everybody does what works for them. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So I know they always say like, don't, what we were always told in school, like, don't just pick any job, which is really hard to do when you're first graduating. Cause you're like, I just want to take any job. Right. I just need a job. So I do try to stick to that, like tell people like, don't just take any job, but sometimes those first 2 years, you got to just do, sometimes people just take whatever to get experience. But ultimately I'd say your ultimate goal should be being a midwife in a way that works for you, like that you've found or that I've found. So yeah, we've had a good talk.
Yes.
Do you have anything else to add?
Not really. Okay. Well, I guess, No, I think I said it with everything because like with the advice and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't think so.
You spoke well and you spoke. I think those are they're good words. People can really hear those things and make choices off of that.
Well, thank you.
Yes, it was super nice to meet you. I'm glad that we finally got caught up.
Yes.
After how many reschedules?
Babies like to be born whenever babies want to be born.
They all wanted to be born when we had a meeting scheduled, which I completely did not mind at all. I love cancellations because then I have like this free hour, right? So totally didn't mind at all. But I am glad that we finally got caught up and I can share your story. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for listening, and I hope you guys will tune in again next time. Remember, you can email me at journey2midwiferypodcast@gmail.com, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram as journey2midwiferypodcast. Send me your suggestions, or if you'd like to be on the podcast, I would love to hear from you. Until next time.